XR technologies like virtual reality and augmented reality are still at the periphery of mainstream adoption. But you might think, since the pandemic hit and most of the world has been in lockdown, at some point in time, virtual reality headsets might be flying off the shelves. With people at home eager for something to do, there's been an uptick in certain kinds of content. Concerts are a category that comes to mind. When the Wireless Festival in London was obviously not going to happen, with bands on stage and an audience in an auditorium, the festival partnered with Melody VR, and the performances went ahead with about 70 artists drawing 132,000 fans online. But in other fields, like VR filmmaking, the virus has affected production in the same way it has slowed down conventionally made film and video. A book that just came out in May, The Infinite Retina by Robert Scoble and Irina Cronin, explores VR, AR, and other spatial computing technologies beyond entertainment, but in terms of how they affect things like transportation, healthcare, or education. The subtitle of the book is Spatial Computing, Augmented Reality, and How a Collision of New Technologies Are Bringing About the Next Tech Revolution. I got to chat with Robert about the state of XR technologies and started by asking him how the pandemic has affected the industry.
Irina and I have talked about COVID a lot. In fact, the publisher was like, should we wait? You know, should we rewrite the book for COVID? And we actually looked into it quite a bit. COVID really isn't speeding up VR or AR that much. What it did do was plow the field and get everybody caught up to where I was, you know, 5 years ago, right? I've been using something like Zoom for years, right? Well, now all my school teachers are on Zoom. If you told me at the beginning of the year, oh, all the schools are going to close and your school teachers are going to be using Zoom, I would have looked at you like you're crazy, right? Because there's, how would you do that? Well, here we are. They're all on Zoom or something like it, right? Microsoft Teams or Google Meet or whatever. And so now we don't need to explain to most people how to get caught up to where we were. Irina and I wrote the whole book on Zoom for a year and a half, right? We did all of our interviews on Zoom. So we've been using Zoom hardcore for a long time. Compared to most people, right, who just got on it 2 months ago. And so that's one way to look at it, that it just plowed the field. It got everybody caught up to a certain kind of computing. And now we don't have to have arguments with school teachers about not being on Zoom when we're trying to sell them a HoloLens, you know? It's like everybody's now caught up. Now we can have a real interesting conversation. Okay, what's after Zoom? What's next? If you really are going to do education, what does it look like? And what's missing from Zoom? What sucks about Zoom? Well, there's a lot of things that suck about Zoom. Unfortunately, this happened like 3 years too early because VR isn't quite there yet.
Really? What's holding it back? Why isn't it quite there?
The screens aren't sharp enough to actually do real work. They're not sharp enough for me. And I'm a proponent of this. I have four of them. I can't use it to read text. I can't answer email in it. I can't live in it. And I can see how we're going to get all that in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, certainly by 2025, where we have a pair of glasses that are pretty damn capable. But that's one thing. The other thing is the cost. You know, an Oculus Quest is $400. Not many people have $400 right now, particularly school systems, right, who are struggling to pay school teachers. So this is another counter trend. And then VR also is black and ugly, and it's heavy, and it hurts your nose after a while, right? You can use it for an hour, and then after that, you're like, this isn't fun.
So what is the issue with the fact that the screen is not sharp enough? Is it a screen technology issue? Is it a microprocessor one? Is it something having to do with the cloud and latency and that kind of thing?
It's the actual screens just today's screens are 1K, and the screens that HP just announced are 2K, And the screens coming next year from Oculus are 4K, right? Once you get to 4K per screen, then your text gets better, and your ability to use it as a personal media device. And let me explain what I mean by that. If I pull out my Oculus Quest and try to watch Netflix or watch CNN on an app like Big Screen, which lets me see a big virtualized screen. The advantage of VR is I get a huge screen, something like 500-inch screen. The disadvantage is the visual acuity of the screen isn't as good as my 1K TV, that's 70-inch TV. There's a screen door effect, and I can't read text, and it's just not real satisfying. It's not like watching a movie on a really, and I'm not even talking about a 4K TV or an 8K TV, right? Just even a cheap ass 1K TV looks better than trying to watch video in VR. And so it really is a limiting factor. I mean, I went to this virtual press conference with HP in Altspace VR in a VR headset, and the screen was big and beautiful, and Alex Kipman and a bunch of people were there talking, so you get the sense of presence of being in a room with other people, and you could ask questions, and you could hear them great. But everything has this watery effect to it. Just isn't satisfying to sit in there, and it's not sharp. And that's what I mean. When we get sharper screens, you're going to see VR start to really take off, particularly with people like me who want to use it more, want to use it for more things, but it bothers you in a bunch of different ways. So there's that. There's the $400, you know, okay, $400 is not, you know, it's a problem, but it's not like when I started out in computing, we'd have all these arguments. Oh, computing is for rich kids. Yeah, because PC in 1977 was $2,000 for an Apple II, which in today's dollars is like $10,000, you know, and that's a big gap to cross, you know. But a company could buy a classroom of 30 kids VR without a huge argument, you know, $400 a piece.
Yeah. Well. You're reminding us, Robert, that, you know, sadly, the digital divide is still an issue in Silicon Valley. Well, talk about the bandwidth issues and cloud issues that might be present with XR technologies right now.
Where do we start talking about that? In Silicon Valley, in rich Silicon Valley, which is compared to any other place in America, is probably better off, has more wealth. 20% of the kids here don't have Wi-Fi at home. So you start thinking about having a virtualized classroom where kids are in VR or AR, and that means 20% of the kids are not able to participate yet, you know? And that's a huge problem when you start thinking about it that way.
But it sounds like there's no issue with the robustness of the cloud and services from data centers.
There hasn't been yet. I mean, my kid plays Rec Room in VR for 2-3 hours a day, and he's never had a problem. And so, yes, there would be a scaling problem if you threw 20-30 million people at it, right? And then all of a sudden, you'd have to raise much more money and buy a lot more Amazon accounts, right? Or Google Cloud or Azure or, you know, DigitalOcean, right? Whatever your favorite cloud hosting is for your little startup. The scalability is pretty good. I think where you're headed, though, is Facebook is designing a pair of glasses without very much GPU on the device. And so if you think of some of the real advantages Apple has, Apple sells a lot of people a phone, which is going to have a 5G radio soon. So you're going to have something like 15 megabits per second, which is 3 times more than LTE at the bottom end, all the way up to 10 gigabits per second at the high end if you're real close to a millimeter wave cell tower and, you know, and have line of sight to it. And the top end bandwidth is so freaking incredible that, you know, I watch TV on my LTE iPhone all the time walking around, and I have 4 megabits per second, you know, compared to 2 gigabits per second. Whew, there's so much bandwidth coming. And so what there is there's new architectures coming that let Facebook and others build much cheaper devices that will let them put the GPUs in new kinds of edge computing servers. Maybe you have a little box in your house with 5 GPUs in it, and it's getting white hot because you're playing a bunch of video games with your family, right? Or there's a GPU on the cell tower and serving a few hundred people. Or you're waiting a little bit for your packets to go to a big data center where there's banks and banks and banks of GPUs, you know, doing something like Google Stadia, where it's streaming the video game to you. And it's so fast and so much bandwidth between you and the data center that you don't care that it's not being rendered locally. But that's 5 years away, 7 years away, 10 years away. It depends what neighborhood you're in and how close you live to a cell tower that's going to be put up and how good the fiber backhauls are. And a lot of unknowns and a lot of variants, right? In the best of cases, you're going to have so much bandwidth that you can do crazy stuff like that. But I'm sure Nutanix is dreaming of that world, because all of a sudden, if you have millions and millions of people on 5G all hooked up to data center, the need for virtualization goes way up.
Well, what's amazing, I remember a few months before you came onto PodTech, we were at Sundance in 2006 at a booth sponsored by Adobe, and there was a guy there with a cell phone, and he was saying, look what you can do. You can actually watch a movie on a cell phone.
I know.
And he had it on a chip or a card, and he put the card in the phone, and everyone gathered around and said, wow, a whole movie on a cell phone.
A whole movie locally on a cell phone. Now you just pull it up on Netflix. And boom.
Well, of course, it seems funny now, but, you know, he wasn't presenting it as the be-all and end-all. It was a demo.
Yeah.
But it was the first step in a long technology journey. It's amazing how far
we've come. It is amazing what world we're in now.
Well, Robert, let me ask you a question about the content creation going on right now in 2020. How do you think COVID is affecting content creators? Is it changing the way people are writing and producing content right now? Is it accelerating that, or is it holding creators back? What's your sense of that?
Well, I sort of split it up into 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, and then longer than two, right? Longer than two, I think we're just, either we're used to people dying, or we have a vaccine, or we're just back to some sort of going back to work at some level, right? It probably won't be as much as it was, right? All of a sudden, all these companies are like, oh yeah, working from home seems to be working, so why do we need our office, right? Let's get rid of our WeWork, or let's get rid of our corporate real estate, or let's cut it down, or let's pay you less if you want to go to somewhere cheaper. You know, we're willing to do that because we can pay you less, you know, something like that, right? 2 years from now, we're going to settle in on a new normal, right? And it probably will be less in the office than it was before, right? 2019, right? But I assume we're going to need studios. We're going to need football stadiums. We're going to need basketball stadiums, right? For sporting content. Maybe you don't have as many people in them. Maybe the people are put there by a computer, you know, because I was in an Intel studio down in LA where it's a big dome with green walls that has 100 cameras in the dome, and it virtualizes a basketball stadium, And so you could shoot.
Oh, so it's like a green screen.
Yeah, you could shoot a basketball game in the dome. It's a big dome. And it's captured volumetrically. And then everything else could be fake. the audience is fake, right? And this is how they make movies, right? If you think movies are real, you're not rational, right? Go and watch some of the Star Wars was made, for instance. So there's nothing real. I mean, the only real thing is like the actor's eyeballs.
Right.
Everything else has been changed in a computer, you know? And even their eyes are changed. Yeah. So I think there's not much that's real in movies anymore. Are those kinds of studios needed for entertainment purposes? Absolutely. Are we building new ones? Absolutely. Because like I said, 5 years from now, a lot of people are wearing glasses and computing in glasses or headsets or whatever you call VR, AR. And you're going to want to watch your football games volumetrically, right? Because you can have your football stadium on your coffee table in front of you. And then you can have the 2D videos that are still being shot. 2D videos not going away behind it as a big ass screen, right? So it's like, you can sit on your couch and it's like being at the stadium.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, I see this thread in you with this. So I remember when you first came to PodTech, what was said was that you were going to blog.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that long after you got there that you had a video camera and you were shooting video.
Yeah.
And in one of your posts, you were saying that you even wanted to make movies. And then you moved on to, well, you didn't move away from video, but you moved on to Google Glass. And now I'm starting to see this thread of how these things sort of combine for you. And I'm not trying to psychoanalyze you or anything like that around where you are in terms of media and that kind of thing. But it does seem like there is this convergence. When I think of Robert Scoble, I do think of video, but I also think of VR and I think of microprocessors and all of that kind of coming together.
Yeah, Google Glass is just a little taste of augmented reality, and it barely was a good taste. It wasn't even that good of a taste of it. I mean, compared to a HoloLens or a Magic Leap kind of device, which is still too expensive to make. I think there's something deeper here in my career and probably in yours. I started out in 80 running a camera at a church, and my camera was $100,000 and had tubes in it.
Wow, yeah. That is so interesting, because I had a very similar experience. My first work in video was also working in a church. Was it an Ikigami or one of those broadcast kind of cameras?
It wasn't quite that good. It was a Sony, but it was like one step down from Ikigami. And the church spent $500,000 on three cameras, a switcher and a beta recorder, right? No internet, no live streaming. And they were tubes, and it was like not even 1K. You know, it was old style, you know, TV. And all my career, TV has gotten better and cheaper to where my iPhone now can do 4K live streaming from the camera. And American Idol is using iPhones to stream their show onto broadcast TV. So a $1,000 camera is now good enough to do broadcast TV. Now, they'd rather have the $100,000 camera, but hey, they did pretty good with, you know, little 1K, $1,000 iPhones, right? Also, I started out as a photographer, visual communicator, and cameras have gone from film back then and darkrooms to digital, to Instagram. And I started learning to write about that in the 80s, because I learned the journalists who wrote had power where the photographer didn't. So I started writing. Mm-hmm. And blogging came along, and now we have Twitter and Facebook and, you know, all that. And we have AIs now that listen to us and write for us. I wrote some of the book just talking to my microphone into Otter, and it would write, you know, what I was talking, right? All of media is ratcheting up and becoming more virtualized and quicker and cheaper and more capable. And I just like playing with it all. I'm not real specialized. I'm just like, you know, I do some photography, some video, some writing. and some other things. And I think it's about to come together into a new kind of medium, a new kind of TV. And where I'm going with this is it when you're in metaverses, like my son's playing in Altspace VR, Altspace VR or Rec Room are two of the basic metaverses. And then there's something like Somnium Space, which is like being in Silicon Valley, but it's all virtual. All the buildings, the plots of land are virtual. Everything you're walking, you're moving around in VR. It looks like it's real, but it's all virtual, right? Buildings, churches, museums, they're all, there's a bunch of people building a really cool, like Burning Man kind of thing in there. And in fact, Burning Man's building one of their own, a metaverse of their own. Right. But when you're in a metaverse, you can have this kind of conversation, but with presence, I can actually throw something at you or shoot you or, you know, or high five you. But it's not like the real world where we can actually touch each other. It's close to that because our hands are touching, but not physically, but in virtual. Right. And the cameras then are, you can have virtual cameras. And this is how they were shooting that press conference at HP. They had a virtual camera that was moving around the audience, right? Capturing the virtual scene as if it was real and streaming that out to YouTube. So people on 2D screens could watch what was going on in VR in my headset and other people's headsets and see a 2D representation of a virtual world, a metaverse. That's the new TV and that's the new entertainment. The problem is nobody has headsets. I can say, hey, this is more enjoyable at some level than going to Coachella and watching a music. Like you go to the Wave and they have really beautiful live concerts that are actually more enjoyable in many ways than Coachella. They're not as enjoyable because you're not with other people physically. You're dancing with other people, but they're all virtual, right? So, and on the other hand, you don't have some of the problems that you have when you're physical because you're not having sexual harassment, right? And if you do, you just block them, right? You don't have fights. You don't have, you know, viruses. Can't get a virus in a metaverse, right?
Well, this goes back to that idea of your point that COVID hit us maybe 3 years too early.
Yeah, yeah. But on the other hand, what it has done is plowed the field. So now everybody can have a decent conversation about what's next. Because everybody's on Zoom. Now I don't need to worry about getting a school teacher on Zoom just to get them to the next step. Now everybody's on Zoom. All right. What's next? Well, don't you hate looking at Brady Bunch when you're on a conference call, right? Don't you wish you could touch them, be with them? Don't you want to go back to the conference room and have some of that? Yeah, but I don't want to get a virus. Yeah, you could wear VR. Don't you want to work on a 3D thing? You know, are you building a car? Don't you want to see the CAD of the car in the middle of the meeting so you can walk around it and talk about it? Yeah, that would be cool. And back to education. I was walking around the virus in a VR app called Nanome, Nanome. And I was walking around with a bunch of scientists who were teaching me about the peptides and the chemical structure of the virus. And I actually got to see what the thing looked like. It was as big as a football field. And we could walk around it. And we can learn about the chemical binds that are there. And they're using this technology to design drugs and vaccines because they're like, will this vaccine actually attack it properly? Well, here we can actually see how it would work. For education, if I had this in chemistry class, oh my God, I might have had a different career because I just couldn't visualize chemistry very well because it's like, what's a molecule? Can't see it. Well, you can sort of see the expression of it in a liquid, you know, but I don't understand it. If I had this tool, I'd be able to see it. You mean if I added an oxygen molecule to this, it turns into something else? Oh, I get that, right? And then we could 3D print the molecule and try and see it, right? And see it work in the real world, right? I mean, it's pretty crazy. Education's going to be very different a decade from now than it is today. It's different today than it was 3 months ago. I mean, radically different. Now, my school is in Silicon Valley is telling my kids, we might have you come to the school for 2 days a week, but you're going to have to wear a mask and you have to be socially distanced. And there's going to be a lot of rules. Or you can stay home and have learning at home again. What a bad choice.
You know, I thought about this before, and generally I'm pretty happy with how old I am and what I've experienced. It feels about right in terms of growing up through the computer revolution and experiencing what we have right now.
The problem is we lived through probably the best period of human history.
Right, the development of it. But I'm talking about, you know, when we go to the grave.
Nah, just the ability to see.
I can't just help but think that there will be some on the verge kinds of technological developments where we're going to think, God, I wish I had 5 more years or 10 more years in order to experience.
Absolutely. That. The technology is still increasing in quality. The technology is going to get pretty crazy and we'll see how far it goes and how fast we can fix some of these bigger problems that keep us from enjoying, virtuality.
Yeah, we have the social issues that we have to deal with as well.
It's social, at worst, climate change.
Right.
You know, if your house is being battered by a storm, you can't really enjoy VR. You know, right?
Right.
You're worried about survival. You know, and so you're not in the mode for putting on a headset, learning something new, or even just playing a game. You're not going to play a game if you're it. And then your connectivity is, being radically changed too, right? Even if your house doesn't fall down, your fiber line is falling down, stuff like that. So,
yeah, well,
it's a real problem.
We'll try this question on for size, and has to do with the perceptions of XR right now. It's not really that easy in terms of its approachability by, the average person that just owns a cell phone. What's your sense of that?
No, and XR is like watching Black Mirror is like XR to me. We barely have VR, right? A few million people out of 8 billion people have VR, right? So very few people have VR and understand the magic of VR. And that'll start changing next year. It'll double. And maybe by 2023, we're at over 10 million headsets, right? Blah, blah, blah. And then Apple's going to come in with AR glasses. And there's a whole bunch of reasons they're going after AR first. They're actually going after eyeglasses, right? They're like, how do we add a few features to eyeglasses to disrupt the eyeglass industry and get people to buy Apple glasses instead of, some Oakleys or something like that? Those are going to come in 2022, but they won't have a lot of capabilities because they have to be very small. And there's a big privacy concern of, do you put a lot of cameras on them? Well, that freaks people out. Maybe in 10 years, people won't be freaked out by having 7 cameras on their face, right? And VR is actually helping with that, right? Because VR has 4 cameras now in your house, and you're getting used to, okay, it's not, infringing on my privacy there. So let's move it along a bit. And take people on a journey. I don't know that that answered the question.
Well, I think that maybe I should, let me ask it this way.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what a television is. They know where, in general, where the television signal comes from. They know how to operate the TV. Everyone knows about their cell phone. They generally know it comes from a signal from a tower, and they know how to operate their cell phone. But when it comes to XR technologies, when are we going to get to the point, you think, where everybody knows?
I think when Apple comes in the market, they're going to explain it. Like, hey, we have eyeglasses. You don't want eyeglasses with just corrective lenses. Do you want to see at night? AR. Do you want to see notifications, like laid on top of the world? AR. Do you want to have a little game with your kids where you're playing with your hands and you're moving a virtual thing around the table? AR. Do you want to watch football while you're walking around a shopping mall? AR. And they'll keep layering in some of these newer capabilities. Do you want to watch your health and have meditation? You know, a coach teaching you, AR, right? Da, da, da. And Apple has the marketing budget and has the trust of people to at least raise everybody's awareness, like, oh, maybe I should consider buying those because those are bring some interesting new things to the world. After Apple does that, and Apple also has stores where you can actually go and try them out and see, do you like it?
Yeah, that's key. That's right? A big deal.
It's a huge deal. It's hurting VR because, like, three months ago, I went to Best Buy in Silicon Valley, right? And I went and I said, hey, I have $500. I want to buy some VR. Can I try it out?
Yeah, they have it in a box.
No. What do you mean, no? It's locked up. It's locked up. We don't do demos. It's locked up. If you want to buy one, we'll sell you a box. Yeah, but I want to try it out first. I don't buy things without trying it out. No, you got to come back Friday when the Facebook guy's here, you know? And so you can't even get a good demo. And even with the Facebook guy there, you get a 10-minute demo. That's not enough to really get you into it. You have to really see a bunch of things over and over and over again before you even understand how broad it is, right? It's not just for video gaming anymore. And Apple has the ability to do all that. All right. Once Apple explains to the market, hey, there's a new thing, a new paradigm, new way to compute, new way to watch TV, new way to entertain yourself, new way to educate yourself, new way to, you know, mountain bike, right? New way to see the world, right? Then everybody else can do it, right? Because they're all keyed up, right? Facebook, App, Google, Magic Leap, Huawei, right? Unreal, and others are all keyed up to bring glasses to the market. And but they need Apple to break the market open first and explain it, you know? Then they can come in and say, oh, Apple doesn't do this and this and this. Our glasses have bigger field of view or better color or more cameras because they're scared of privacy. Here's some new capabilities, right? And you'll see that play out in the market for ever, you know, 40 years. New glasses, new capability, new screen, new cameras, new AI, new hand tracking, new sensor, new smells. You know, it'll just keep going and going until we get to the actual jacking in of God, digital God. And Elon Musk is talking about this, right? We can communicate with God today. Hey, Siri. But the communication is really slow and stupid because Siri is pretty slow and stupid. Well, 40 years from now, that communication is going to be done with a Neuralink kind of thing where you just think something and it goes to God and God does it and God sends you back the answer, all with just thinking, you know, digital God. No,
I understand. No, I'm just thinking that it dovetails into that idea that there is a part of our brain responsible for beliefs in sort of a superior or invisible being or something like
that. Well, you're going to believe in, I mean, I'm already believing in a digital God. I have Google and Amazon, Alexa and Siri in my house. And I asked Google, what's the square root of 64? And it answers me. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. And you ask it any question and it answers you. It's like, it knows more than I do, and it's more connected. It understands what the hell's going on in the news, blah, blah, blah. And so at some point, it's going to get so connected and so powerful and so good at reading patterns that what's the difference between that and the real and analog God, you know, that you used to pray to?
I still can't get over the idea that I'm always imagining. Even when the AI just seems like it's on top of everything, I still can't get past the idea that I'm talking to a toaster.
Yeah, you're talking to millions of toasters. That's the breakthrough, right?
Yeah, that's right.
When you're talking to a Tesla, you're not talking just to one chip. You're talking to 800,000 cars that are driving around with cameras on them, right? And all of the centralized computers that they have up in the data center with running on Nutanix or VMware or something. it's the connectedness that brings the power to it. And the computer can see all pattern all the time really, really quickly. Human can't do that.
Yeah.
The world is about to change because of robots and self-driving cars too, which is part of it's a part of spatial computing. And people don't really recognize that because they keep keying in on VR. Well, VR is 4 or 7 cameras on your face bringing you a virtualized world. What's a self-driving car? It's 4 or 7 cameras on the car that are understanding the real world and then virtualizing it and then presenting you with moving around a virtualized world. Soon you're going to see AR games that you play in the car while the car's driving, and the car's sensors are helping the glasses play the game with you, right?
Yeah.
And the connectedness of the system is going to make the game really badass.
Right. Well, it reminds me of a presentation from someone from Google, 2008, 2009, I can't remember when. I think he was from Google, who had did a project of taking photos from Google Maps, taking photos from all around the world, of people taking photos of all around the world, and putting them together a composite set of images. And at the time, it was hard to imagine what that might be good for. I mean, it was really cool to look at. It was really cool to see.
My friends and I talk about this all the time. Like, Google and Apple Maps are billion-dollar businesses, right? They show you things, and they take you to businesses on top of the map and have advertising on top of the map.
But you're talking about something that's, like, even on a grander scale than that.
But Google and Apple drove mapping cars down my street, but those images are 22 months old now. A Tesla goes down my street every 3 or 4 minutes, right? So now you could have a map of a city where the whole city gets updated in real time. And if there's a pothole, a new pothole shows up, everybody knows about it.
Yeah.
Right. And everybody sees it, and the AI sees it and then changes the lane and says, oh, we need to move over to lane number 2 because there's a pothole in lane number 1. Right. Or there's a bucket in the road, or there's a protest, or there's a fire, right? And you'll have live 3D video of that as the Tesla drives by and grabs that video, you know? That's why having a neural network on the road is so important, and why I think Tesla's stock is so high. Because investors are going, this is going to be a real business real soon. No, you add glasses onto that, and then you're seeing the Tesla view of the world. It's like, now you can see at night. Right? Because Tesla has imaged the road in 3D and knows where everything is in that space. And you put on glasses and now you can see that same data without having any visible light. It's crazy, right? So that's where Apple's coming. It's like, you know, hey, you can see at night with these things, or you can see things you can't see with the human eye. I mean, even just a camera, you hold up your iPhone at night, you see more on the iPhone screen with the iPhone camera than you do with the naked eye. And it's like, oh, let's take that a little further. How can you make it even better? If you had enough AR glasses on people, you could build a 3D model of the world, and then you could visualize yourself in that 3D model that's laid on top of the real world. So citywide raves, citywide movies, right? World of the War 2023. Or with the glass, you can watch a city get blown up by aliens, and F-35s come over your head and start fighting with the aliens and stuff, right? And it's like, and you take off the glasses and it's like, nothing's there. It's just a city. I mean, that's what they showed me at Mitaio, right? They showed me monsters on the side of a skyscraper 10 years ago, and Apple bought that company. I still expect that to happen soon. You know, I want monsters on the size of skyscrapers. I haven't seen that.
Well, maybe we'll see the day where all of this technology will just be in something like a pair of reading glasses.
Sometime in the next 5 years. So if you live 5 years, you're going to see it.
Oh, really? You think it's going to be that soon?
Yeah. Apple's coming in 2022.
Well, that's AR. I'm talking about the full.
No, that's AR is good enough to do all that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The images might ghost a little bit. You see through the virtual images because the optics aren't quite there yet to take light out of the air. I mean, HoloLens already does it at some level. I mean, I play a game in my HoloLens 1, which is already 5 years old. and monsters come out of the walls, right? They break holes in the walls and they come out at you through your walls. What happens in five more years when the optics get good? Yeah, mind-blowing stuff. So it's not far away. I mean, that's why we wrote the book, because it's like I'm seeing all this stuff coming to the market like in the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, do consumers care about it for 7 or 8? Maybe not. You know, I mean, the Newton came, and then it was 10 more years before the iPhone, because it just takes time to perfect it and get it down to what consumers want and get it in a form factor that consumers want. So,
well, not to extend the conversation any further, I know you got to go, but this is like a whole nother thing, and that is you start inserting AI into all of this, where you've got companies that are now allowing for the design of interiors or bridges or architectural things, in which the design process using XR technologies is so realistic that there are people that go to a site and think they're going to lean on something that's actually not there because they've got the goggles on and they're seeing them like that.
Yeah.
And then you start throwing AI into this.
It's crazy. Crazy world coming.
I mean, the possibilities just start to become mind-blowing.
It's a crazy world. The AI is crazy that's coming out too. The ability for a camera to see a cup and know it's a cup is really pretty crazy coming along, and is the training time on that is coming way, way, way down. And now you don't even need to train it with pictures. You train it with video. So it's about to really get crazy. The whole space, autonomous cars are about to get really crazy. AR glasses are about to get crazy. VR is about to get crazy. You know, next year is going to be a VR year. I think the true VR year, the VR year where most people are like, okay, I'm in. You know? I'm in. I give it up. I'm in. It's amazing now. You know?
Well, I got to think that somebody somewhere in XR technologies right now is learning something because of having to shelter in place in a way that they wouldn't have learned had they not been locked down in some area of presentation or script writing or shooting or something like that. There must be some innovating going on that is sort of a silver lining in the cloud.
They are. It's just, I mean, I told you about The Wave, which is a music. It's like doing LSD, but it's all VR, and it's a live performance with a live, you know, like the Glitch Mob or, and it's really beautiful, really, really interesting, fun. And you're there with other people all in VR, but it's like, fuck, this is so close to brilliant. And you need to wait for the 4K screens. When the 4K screens come, it's all going to pop. And then I can show it to you and say, this is it. This is finally here, you know. And also, the 4K screens are going to come with a reduction in size and weight and heat, and it'll get more comfortable. And so you can wear it for 4 or 5 hours. Where my Oculus Quest, I get tired of wearing it after an hour. I can't live in it for a while. My kid wears it for 3 hours, but he's 10 and he puts up with a lot of pain. Makes me feel uncomfortable. I'm out, you know? And so some of those problems will go away next year. They certainly go away the year after. 2022, they start really getting much lighter. And by 2025, there's no excuses anymore. All of us are going to have something on our face to experience these things with. That's when the world really shifts again. It's like, what? Why would anybody go to a physical event? I don't get that, other than the other people. There's an analog, there's an advantage to analog to the real world, which you can't get on VR, but there's a huge cost to it. I mean, going to Coachella costs $3,000, right? And most people can't do that. That's why when Marshmello played in Fortnite, he had 24 million people. When he played at Coachella, he had 20,000 people. And yes, it's more fun to be in the front row, but very few people get to experience that. So the gap between the real world and the virtual world is closing, and the virtual world is bringing things now to the table that the real world can't offer. And that's when it gets real exciting. And it's just about to. Hope that helped.
Yeah, absolutely, Robert. Thank you so much for your time and for
having
this chat. It was really great talking to you.
Thanks.
Okay, stay safe.
Have fun. Bye.
Robert Scoble is a tech writer and possessor of one of the most curious minds in technology. His latest book is The Infinite Retina, Spatial Computing, Augmented Reality, and How a Collision of New Technologies Are Bringing About the Next Tech Revolution. He co-authored it with Irina Cronin, the CEO of the company Infinite Retina. I'm Jason Lopez, and this is the Tech Barometer Podcast. Tech Barometer is produced by The Forecast. There are more stories on technology and interviews with people in tech at The Forecast by Nutanix.com.